Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, with a focus on Kenpo, but we have grown to many other arts on the show here. I am Reggie Darden, and I am once again honored to have my first guest back on, Mr. Jamie Seabrook. And you know, we don't have as per usual, I don't really have a script or an outline of how this show goes. So we're going to wing it, but we're just going to kind of get into what Mr. Seabrook's been up to over the course of the year. Well, I guess maybe I didn't really mention that. So as a recording here, we're about two or three weeks away from the first episode, the first recording of this show. And so the time flies by so fast, and I had no idea that that we're coming up to the anniversary. And initially my thought was that, oh well, I need to do some kind of big extravaganza, and time gets away from me, and I've got so many other things going on that I just totally skipped all of that. So we're just gonna have kind of I apologize if we're gonna be kind of all over the place, but but that's that's how this show goes. So I'm just I wanted to kind of really say that I've just been really thankful for all of the support that my dozens of listeners have given. And the show has been going way better than I could have ever imagined. I'm just really just shocked and blown away by the support and by the guests that I've had on. I still can't believe that I've had the opportunity to talk to some of the people that I have. And it's just been a fun ride. And as long as people keep agreeing to be on, I will keep doing this and just getting all those wonderful stories and try and get good conversations about Kenpo and about the martial arts. And we'll just keep rolling on here. So I think what we'll start things off here is it's been about a year since that first episode. So let's find out what Mr. Seabrook has been up to over the years. There's been quite a few milestones, and I will try and I guess we'll kind of try and compare and contrast a little bit this episode from the first episode. I just got done re-listening to that, so got a few things that kind of came up during the episode that I thought was kind of funny in comparison to how things are going now. But let's turn it over to our esteemed guest here. And what are the things that have happened over the course of over the year? And we'll just kind of go from there.
Yeah, thanks, Reggie. And before I get into that, I just want to say thanks for having me back on your show. I think you do a tremendous job with this podcast. And it really is a testament to your hard work that you've put in a full year. I think the opportunity for people to share, what they're doing in martial arts and really bring together harmonization of martial arts and people coming together. And that's really what it's all about. I'm a true believer that the higher your rank, the more humble you should be. It's not always that way, to be frank. But it should be. And I think that you truly exemplify what martial arts is supposed to be about. So I'll just kind of say that as a prefix into what I'm going to talk about for the past year. So the first thing I'd say is, since the last time I was on your show, the first episode, we continue to have twice per year, biannually, a big event in Blenheim, Ontario, Canada. And we do that usually in April and either September or October. And we bring together a group of martial artists almost always exclusively Kempoist from across Canada and the United States. They travel to that event, which is really cool. And we have a really, really, really dedicated group. Myself, I'm one of the two main instructors at the camp. The other person is Master Todd Durgan, who is the founder of the PKI and the Face It Combatives Kempo Alliance. And our next event is coming up September 20th. And I just heard, it was yesterday or a couple of days ago, that we already sold out for September 20th, which is not about us. I don't want to go tap myself on the shoulder. It really, to me, is a testament of the people that we're bringing together. I always say I have two things that are required if someone wants to train with me. The first is humility, and the other is an eagerness to learn. So if you know, someone comes to me and they say, you know, I'm already an expert in this, an expert in that, so I'm just trying to get a little bit of extra stuff, it's probably not the right, I'm probably not the right instructor for you. But if you're willing to kind of empty your cup, hence the empty hands, or get a bigger cup and be willing to learn, those are the people that I like to attract into Seabrook Martial Arts Academy. And I think we've done a good job at really producing an atmosphere where everyone is on board with that. So I'm really excited about that event coming up September 20th. So we had an event last fall, and we did another one in April 2025, April, May. I can't remember the exact date, but early around that time. And at that event, we do seminars, and then we also do live black belt testing. And, you know, they do participants that are testing for, you know, various degrees of black belt do sets, Kempo forms. They do self-defense techniques. They do live sparring. It was pretty interesting at our last event just this past spring. Grandmaster Todd Durgan came right off the panel. It was just me and him, and actually fought the people that were testing. Like, how cool is that? That's completely unheard of. So that was quite an event. This past February, I had the opportunity to teach seminars in Santiago, Chile. And that was quite the experience. First time being in South America, I brought my wife with me. We stayed at Nelson Alvarez. He's one of my black belts. We stayed at his place with him and his fiance. And it was a great experience. I can say that I taught a master class, which was basically for brown and black belts. And then the next day, it was a Saturday, it was basically an 8-hour long seminar. So it was like 4 hours, a 1-hour break, and then an additional 4 hours. And it was interesting because the location that where I was supposed to teach at was no longer available. So I ended up teaching at Nelson Alvarez's home. He has his own built-in dojo, but it was hot there, right? That's their hot time. And I remember teaching, and during my seminar, because we actually had a live feed too, if anyone wanted to join on Zoom, some of the black belts, you wouldn't see this on the video, would kind of, for just 15 seconds, leave my seminar, stick their head in the water of a pool that was right behind, and come back in. So it was really, really intense. I taught American Kempo techniques, grafting. I taught Filipino martial arts, stick and knife work. And I also did a lot of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. So that was a great experience. And at that, I tested Nelson Alvarez for black belt 6 degree. He was the first person that I tested for 6 degree. And someone else tested for 6 degree this past April. Evan Wiley has been with me since, I think, 1997. And now Matt Trejo, who I know was on your show, will test for black belt 6 degree also this September 20th.
Oh, very nice, very nice. So, yeah, such a small world, and it didn't even really dawn on me. So, you know, like you mentioned, I did interview Matt Trejo, and I did also interview Evan Wiley.
Oh, cool.
As we're recording, that episode has not been put out yet, but yeah, I did have a chance to talk with him. So Very excited about that. Actually, I think I've interviewed quite a few of people you've trained. Not all of those have been put out as of recording. Carrie Barnes, I know I interviewed her, so her episode is still forthcoming. And I'll have to look at the list, but I believe there's quite a few people that have trained with you that I've had a chance to talk to. So
that's amazing. Thank you.
And some people I'm still working on. it's always a tricky trying to get folks
trying to get
on. Everybody's really busy, and I'm really busy as well. So, but. We'll get people as we can. So one of the things that comes to mind since we last recorded, you got promoted as well, and I guess let's kind of talk about that a little bit. How does that feel to be in the upper echelons of the Kempo journey, the Kempo, and we kind of talked about this on our first episode, but kind of the quote unquote mastery of the art, and just so how does it feel to be in those ranks now?
Yeah, my ninth degree promotion was just a complete honor. It meant so much to me. Master Todd Durgan did the official ceremony, but one of the amazing things is that in addition to him signing my ninth degree certificate, it was signed by seven other 10th degree black belts. So, including the late Dennis Knatzer, and Mr. Knatzer is someone who reached out to me frequently. He would call me out of the blue and just want to talk about Kempo. And he wanted to pick my brain on what I knew and what I need to know more of. He was really a fountain of knowledge. He would just call me and say, "Okay, Jamie, how you doing? Good. Okay, let's talk about long four. Tell me everything you know about it. Start, and I'll just listen," or stuff like that, right? And so for someone like with his knowledge base, Dennis Knatzer, to sign my certificate, oh my goodness, it meant everything. And then when I heard about his passing, it hurt, but it really meant a lot to have his signature and many other great 10th degree black belts, Paul Casey, founder of the Kempo Karate Hall of Fame, etc., on it. It was actually the first test, first promotion, I should say, that I didn't do a physical test for. I had tested for every single rank, first degree to eighth degree. Because it was kind of like an PKKA board of directors, Todd Durgan, and getting the approval of many other 10th degrees on the signature, it was like, it was more of an honorary promotion, if you would, for ninth degree, but it meant so much to me. And to have a lot of my, it happened at one of our big events, our event last year, September or October, I can't remember the exact date. I think September. But to have it in front of all the people who traveled far to our event, both within Canada and the United States, in front of them meant a lot to me. I can also say, and it was such an honor, just this past June, I was inducted into the Kempo Karate Hall of Fame in Las Vegas. And again, just a huge honor. One of the nerve-wracking things that happened, though, at the event was the day of the event, I was told that by senior master of the arts and founder of the Kempo Hall of Fame, Paul Casey, that I'm going to perform long form eight. And I said, okay, I'm good to go. It's one of those ones that because I only teach black belts, Reggie, mm-hmm. I teach all of the material a lot. I teach 7 days a week. So I didn't have any nerves about performing form eight, Except when I got there, they said, okay, you're going to perform Form 8. I said, great. You know, I'm from Canada, guys, so I couldn't bring any live blades. Can someone let me borrow a good pair of knives? Well, at the time, no one had knives. So one of my students from Denver, Colorado, Mike Klusman, says, here's two knives, but they were rubber knives. And I never practice with rubber knives because they don't have that real feel. Mm-hmm. And then I was nervous because I was worried. I'm not used to rubber knives. They're going to fall. They're going to slip right in front of me, like standing right in the center, or sitting right in the center, rather, is Chuck Sullivan.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, like right there. And I'm thinking, okay, now my nerves have kicked up. Well, fortunately, I got through the form. I didn't drop and it went well. But then, I was told, okay, we would like you to, because there was a theme for the Kempo Hall of Fame. It was really on weapons. So they said, we would love you to put on a little demo of some weapons defense, knife defense, club defense, etc. Okay, sure. So I said, okay, Mike Klusman was at the back. I said, Mike, come on up and bring some sticks with you and some knives. So he did. And, you know, I put on a little demo. I didn't know what to expect. Of course, everyone was sitting right there. And again, right in the middle again was, you know, senior master of the arts, Chuck Sullivan. So I went for 5 or 10 minutes and I said, okay, that's kind of some of the stuff that we do. I showed a lot of Filipino, approaches to defending against a club and a knife, as well as some Kempo. So I changed up some of the lance techniques to give it more of a control disarm technique, or you could say divert, cease, control, disarm. About 10 minutes in, I said, hopefully everyone enjoyed that. And then I think it was Todd Durgan said, oh, let's go for about another 20 minutes. So I went about a half an hour straight in front of so many martial arts masters, people I consider legends, watching me put on a live demo that was not prepared. I was right on the spot. There was one point where I saw blood on Mike Klusman's wrist. So I whispered to him, are you okay? Oh, no, it's fine. I wasn't using real blades. It's just from the repeated cutting motion. Just keep going, he said. So I just kept going, and it went really well. And to be honest, even though it was nerve-wracking, with someone like Chuck Sullivan there, it was beyond an honor to be able to demonstrate and show some of the stuff that I do.
Yeah, very, very nice. I can definitely relate to the kind of getting cut up here. Kind of jump over my shoulder here real quick. So you can probably see that I got myself a training karambit. So for the listeners, I've got my little practice karambit here, and it's not sharp, but it does have a point on the end of it. And I've jacked up my wrist quite a bit with this supposedly safe karambit,
and I bet.
Actually just poked myself right now with it. So. I'm kind of torn in that I'm definitely of the mind of having a practice tool that is closer to the real thing than, you know, having, yeah, like a rubber knife. And I'm blanking on who I heard mention something about having practice knives that are the same as the real knives, or the real ones that they carry, in that when you have the rubber knives, you're not afraid of, you know, defending against them. So you may not do your defense in quite the same aggressive way, or you know, kind of just oh, well, I'm not really worried about it, so I'm not going to defend as hard as I would in a real situation. And Yeah, that really hit me as, oh yeah, that I never thought about the psychology of that. And so
Yeah, and I would actually argue there's kind of layers to it. So even if you get a good realistic training knife, I would go, sorry, but it's still a training knife. You know, so the you know, although we're getting a bit more realism, you know, someone pulls out a real knife, that level of nerves is a whole different level. So yeah, I like training with a solid training knife that's good to grip, that gives you a greater sense of realism, but it's still not the real thing. And of course, I'm not in any way advocating to train with the real thing. It's just, you know, sometimes we can get a false confidence about our skill level. And the truth be told that, you know, it takes a long time to become very skilled with weapons, including knives, clubs. I was fortunate. I think I don't know if I mentioned this on the. I haven't listened to her podcast since, but I was fortunate to get my black belt with Grandmaster Remy Priestess in 1991, and I remember people that thought that they were very good with knives, and Remy would kind of test them out a little bit, and you could see they would have been, to be honest, cut to shreds. So I do a lot of Filipino martial arts training to enhance my kempo, to enhance the lance techniques, certainly to enhance the storm techniques, the club techniques, and I think that's important, quite frankly, because as as I've said before, I think a lot of our club and knife techniques are there, and not everyone agrees with this, but this is the way I teach it for category completion purposes. So, for example, if we look at our knife techniques in Kenpo, we do a lot of check and strike, check and strike, check and strike, check and strike. And that kind of adheres to Kenpo being a striking martial art. But the longer someone has a weapon in their hand, the greater statistically the odds that we're going to get cut bad. So if you think of, I call it CDT, to really reduce control, disarm technique. The more we can control the weapon, get rid of the weapon slash disarm it, and then use our technique, the greater the odds that we'll come out and not be severely hurt. I'll say it that way.
Working with the weapons, you know, with all of the other things that I'm involved with, I do want to get more into the weapons. And I also have a little practice Balisong knife that I have, and that one I definitely need to stick with the practice one, because if it was a real one, I would probably not have any more fingers or toes as many times as I've dropped it and tried to try to work with it. So I'm very, very thankful that that one is very much a practice knife and not a real one. But that's the thing, that there's so many things to do in so little times. So kind of going back, listening to our first episode, at the time I was pretty much just doing a Kenpo, and I did mention that I was, you know, kind of curious into looking at other things. And since then, I'm now officially training five different arts at the same time, and keeps me busy. And I'm been I was actually queried this morning, so I went to so for those that may not know, I am now one of the arts that I'm training is in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu at a Henzo Gracie DFW school here. And
And make sure you tell them. Make sure you tell your listeners our talk about jiu-jitsu a year ago.
That was very funny. So listening to our original episode, and at the time I was like, oh, well, I'm not really interested in jiu-jitsu and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I don't want to roll around on the ground. And while I understand that you have to be, if you want to be a great fighter or whatever, you want to have the great ability in self-defense, you need to be capable in all different ranges. So I never thought that jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu was ineffective or anything like that. But I just felt that it wasn't for me. Fast forward to December of last year when I signed up for the Brazilian jiu-jitsu class. And now I can't get enough. I'm actually feeling it as of this morning. I went to the 6 a.m. class, and it's quite a feeling to to get up at 6 in the morning to do jiu-jitsu. I'm not gonna lie that it's definitely a struggle, but I'm enjoying it, and I'm so glad that I found this school and found this teacher. And it's been really fun. Another thing that I kind of laughing about in our original episode, I mentioned that one of the things that I was not a fan about doing jiu-jitsu was that I was like, well, I'm not interested in competing. Fast forward to I will be doing my first Brazilian jiu-jitsu competition on September 6th. And so just gearing up for that. I, you know, never would have imagined that I'm would be doing some competing, but you know, here we are. I'm doing jiu-jitsu and competing, and you know, enjoying every minute of it. So so that's been fun. Getting on the, you know, the cross training train. In our first episode, I mentioned I was eyeballing a Hapkido school. I can now report that I have since joined said Hapkido school, and doing that as well, along with Muay Thai. I'm still doing the American Kenpo. Still getting in some Capoeira as I can. Still probably not as much as I would like to, but. Got some things coming up. Actually, I'm going to be going to a Capoeira event in the beginning of October, and it's funny how these things work out. In that, as soon as I come back, the very next weekend, pretty much the who's who of legendary high ranking Kenpo people are going to be in my area. Doing some seminars, so I'm gonna have to save my pennies and see if I can get to that. Because I'm really kind of blown away by the lineup of folks. I should have had the list pulled up here, but I do know that Chuck Sullivan is one of the folks that's going to be there. So. I'm really excited about that. Getting to just get a little FaceTime, a little training time with the, you know, Kenpo greats, Kenpo legends, is pretty exciting. So definitely one of the things that I've been just overjoyed by doing this show is just getting to meet and talk to, you know, not only Kenpo greats, but just all around martial art legends and adjacent. I will say that. I mean, I've said it probably on other episodes, but I mean the fact that gotten to talk to people like Ed Parker Jr. and Jeff Speakman. And, which, you know, people that were and are still, very influential in my martial arts journey. But just, you know, the fact that, everyone has been very, very approachable, and so I've been really thankful for that. of course, getting to speak with Dennis Kanatzer was huge, especially you know, with his passing. I believe I was the last interview that was out with him. That almost didn't happen, but luckily I was persistent enough to keep bugging him. And for those that are listening that I reached out to, I'm sure sure you're probably getting tired of getting my messages here periodically, but you know, I want to make sure that I get to everybody that I can. And with that, you know, you never know, the day is not promised to you. And you know, unfortunately, we are losing some of the greats here, and so hopefully I can get those stories out just, you know, continue to do this. So really thankful for that. But going through some thoughts here. I guess I'll throw out a little bit of a kind of a, I don't know, state of the union, or just kind of a contrast of kind of how things have changed a little bit since the show started. I need to go back through some of the other episodes, but just listening to the first one, I was kind of surprised that I have not changed that much the format of the show, so to speak. Still don't do any pre-prep. Maybe I should. Maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. We'll see. The format hasn't really changed that much. Whether that's a good or bad thing, I will leave that to the listeners. But I like how it's been going. I still consider myself pretty much a newbie at this podcasting thing. I used to say that I was a white belt at this, but I think I've moved up to yellow belt, and so we've got that. Probably the one big change is that initially my kind of plan was to do a Kempo show and kind of a Capoeira show and kind of do all these multiple shows, but turns out that doing a podcasting is a lot of work, and doing multiple shows along with a job and a life and doing five martial arts at one time doesn't leave a lot of room for that. So how I initially started doing things was the main show was focused on Kempo, and then the bonus episodes, whenever I spoke with someone that was not a Kempo person, that would be a bonus episode. And I did that for first few episodes, and then once the workload got a little bit too much, I went ahead and changed it up. And so now just all the episodes are getting into the same feed, and just continue the episode numbering, and won't segregate things to bonus episodes or anything like that. So for the listeners, when I started the show, I had put out the kind of call of, oh, well, you know, should I just have Kempo people or have other martial arts people? And I love the arts too much to just limit it to having just Kempo people. So, so I've had, and since I cross train, I've got to have all the different perspectives, but maybe looking through the lens of Kempo. So, I've had all kinds of folks. I've had Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu folks. I've had Hapkido folks, anybody else that wants to train, we'll have them on as well. As as we're recording here, I've got some things that are coming up that I guess I'll just kind of throw out there. One, I did get to interview Paul Herzog the other day. For those that don't know who he is, he did the music for the movie Bloodsport and Kickboxer. And so with doing this show, I felt that I should have people that were, influenced my martial arts training. And Bloodsport is one of those movies that definitely inspired me, and I'm sure many others to train and get in the arts and whatnot. You know, say what you will about Van Damme and his acting and whatever else he's done. I mean, and we won't get into the whole Frank Dukes thing, but that movie definitely was inspirational in the martial arts journey. So it was good to have him on. I've got some folks in that are related to the show WMAC Masters, for those that are familiar with that show. That was a show in the 90s that featured a number of very talented martial artists, and kind of a cheesy show, I guess, as far as artistic quality, but I think it was a very good show. Get very good values. I know we've talked before about just kind of how things are getting away from that that martial way, that a lot of the respect and grit and all those good Karate Kid type values have gone away with how MMA has grown and things like that. I think we definitely need to get back to having more of these kind of wholesome shows that perpetuate the values, the good values of martial arts training, and not just about beating each other up and that sort of thing. So got a number of guests coming soon for that. And working on just trying to get caught back up. Still got a number of episodes that I haven't released as of yet with some folks. So try and get those caught back up and get more great guests. Just kind of other stream of consciousness things that have come up. I myself have had a chance to be on two different podcasts as a guest. So one, the Legends and Dragons podcast with a couple of folks that I train Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with. So I was excited with that. And I am feverishly working on getting, so one of the hosts of that show, a man by the name of Philip Bullock, turns out when I started at the Jiu-Jitsu school, he's one of the professors at the Jiu-Jitsu school that I train at. Turns out that he is a Kenpo guy, or was. I guess maybe he would kind of say was, because he's really all into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu now. But turns out that he is a Kenpo black belt under Paul Mills. And so I'm going to feverishly working to try and get him on the show to share his he's got a pretty fun story. So going to have him on at some point. One of the other shows that I was on was the Everyday Martial Artist podcast, excited to be on that, because the host of that show, Brian Doucette, he was a big inspiration for me doing this show. And so it was a really honor to finally get to be on his show. And he has a thing where he says if you have people that you'd like to be on the show, send them the names and whatnot. And I'm gonna brag here. I'm probably the top person of recommendations. I've my email chain to him is quite extensive of people that I have recommended be on his show, which Mr. Seabrook is one of those, and that was a great episode. So glad that you had the opportunity to do that. And there's a number of other people that I've recommended that have been on the show, and real excited about that. And I'm just really overjoyed at how the show's been going, and thank you so much to everyone that's been supporting and listening, and just keeping the good things going, keeping the growth of Kenpo and just all the great training. So I've been real excited about that. Probably been rambling long enough. So I would say let's throw it back to the guest here. Is there anything maybe that's kind of floated around in your mind that maybe you want to bring up? Or,
well, this is always an interesting topic, is cross training, and I have different perspectives on it. Like, I think cross training is definitely a good thing, right? It's interesting though, Reggie, because you brought up cross training, and I was on one show. For now, I guess I won't say the show, where they said you shouldn't cross train. Now, and this was a 10th degree black belt. Didn't say cross training was bad per se, but they said true masters in the truest sense of the term, study one art. It was kind of I don't agree with that. I think cross training is a really good thing at helping you improve your home base. When I say your home base, your home art. Sometimes though, and again, this can get a little bit of a controversial topic. Sometimes though, I do find, and I think it's great what you're doing. I don't want to, but for some people, cross training in so many arts makes it difficult to get strong mastery in a home art. So for example, if someone trains in, Kenpo karate, we'll call it American Kenpo. It doesn't have to be American Kenpo. But the cross training in this and this and this and this and this and this and this, it's very difficult for their Kenpo instructor to really work on the finer details of the art, because they're trying to memorize things in 2, 3, 5, 6 different arts. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yes.
So for example, as I mentioned before, I only teach black belts. Here's my perspective on cross training, and I'm just gonna spew it out there, and I know there'll be different views, but I think Kenpo is one of the strongest striking arts. This is my opinion, okay? Having done it for the last 40 years, I started in 1985. So I could go out and learn 3, 5, 7, 8 more striking arts, but at the end of the day, I'm still striking.
Exactly.
So if we all acknowledge that Ed Parker's system has significant striking, okay, it's a striking art. It also includes joint locks, takedowns, etc. What's the missing piece? This is me speaking. The missing piece would be clearly not knowing what to do if the fight goes to the ground. Okay, this is me talking. So I think about when, and I say it too, Kenpo's taught in three phases: ideal, what if, formulation. Okay, so then we have our RAM techniques, which are for tackles. And we teach them an ideal phase, and we say, what if this, and what if that, and what if this. But what's the missing what if? Someone's not trying to tackle you to hug you and give you a hug. They're trying to take you to the ground. watch an NFL football game. They're shooting for the legs, and you go to the ground, it's on the ground. But yet, ironically, we talk about the what if, but we don't address the what if for any of the RAM techniques. So to me, the missing piece in American Kenpo, or Tracy Kenpo, most Kenpo lineages or systems that I see, is the jiu-jitsu. What to do if the fight goes to the ground. The other missing piece, and this is my opinion, is the knife and stick training. And again, we have 5 lance techniques total. And as I always say, let's take a look at them, and I'll just spew some things out here. So we have glancing lance, which is for a mid to high level knife thrust. I like to teach it with the right side forward instead of, you know, standing still, even though it's commonly written where we're standing still. So we're kind of in a defensive posture rather than just go ahead and attack me. But that's a high knife thrust. And I'm on the outside of the right arm. And I do the break. I also have one which is right foot forward, which is a low knife thrust. And that's thrusting lance. This is really interesting. Then we have entwine lance, which is our left foot forward, and they're doing a mid to high level knife thrust. Then we have piercing lance, which is also left foot forward, but it's a low knife thrust. We're completing all these categories here. And then we have the lone Michael Myers technique, which is raining lance for the overhand knife. And we take the knife into their thigh, we check, we strike, etc. But these are really based on showing similar movements and completing categories of motion. So what I like to do in terms of the missing piece is work knife drills, sensitivity drills, work club drills from Filipino martial arts so that we can actually work to enhance our lance and our club techniques. So in my opinion, and this is how I teach, and again, I'll just spew it out here. My focus is Kenpo, period. So all of my students, black belts, get promoted in Kenpo alone. But I also give them the jiu-jitsu training of what to do if the fight goes to the ground, and have them work on FMA drills to enhance their knife and stick applications to improve their Kenpo. All that said, when I get into the whole training, cross-training, I believe in cross-training, obviously, clearly I do. But I also think there comes a point where it's like, if you, and let's, we can have a talk about this. If you learn 5, 3, 4, 5, 6 other striking arcs, I have to ask, how come? What do you feel is the missing striking piece that's missing in Kenpo? So, because as an instructor, 9th degree, my goal is to make every black belt freaking good in Kenpo. That means having knowledge of the complete system, all the techniques, the hows, the whys, the extensions, the sets, the forms, the freestyle techniques, the rules and principles of motion. How can I possibly teach that level? I'm just going to throw this out. If they're training in 5, 6 other arts, it's very difficult. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yes.
So while I believe in cross training for sure, especially jiu-jitsu and FMA, cross training in many arts I do feel can be detrimental sometimes.
Yeah, no, I can totally agree and relate, and kind of have to slap myself a little bit. So, I mean, obviously, I am very much for cross training, but in my own experience, very much what you said rings true, in that perfect example for me. So I, at this point in time, I am working towards testing for my brown stripe. So I'm on the 16 technique curriculum, and for our setup here, it's once you get to about halfway through the particular belt's material, then you test for a stripe before you test for the next belt. And I kind of got myself in a little hot water with my instructor from time to time because I'm doing so many arts. Yeah, it is hard to you know focus or master you know the kempo. And as I'm going through and reviewing things, it's like, yeah, I should probably know this technique a little bit better than I do, but I don't really have time because I have to go to jiu-jitsu on Monday and Muay Thai on Tuesday and Hapkido on Wednesday. And it is definitely a slippery slope with the multiple training, and there should definitely be a focus on the core art and then applying the cross training with the other arts. One of the things that you mentioned that I do think is a good question to ask and something I've never really thought about is, yeah, if you're doing these multiple martial arts, you know, why are you doing it? Like you said, you know, if you're doing five different striking arts, it's like, why is that? What pieces are missing from that? And so that's definitely something that I'm going to have to take a look at.
Yeah, I never want to come across as, don't take this the wrong way, but I'm a student of Kempo. So yes, I'm a ninth degree, and I have black belts training with me from all across the U.S. and in Chile and in Canada, but I'm a student of Kempo. And the more and more I teach Kempo, again, I run Seabrook Martial Arts Academy 7 days a week. We always have classes going on. I'm never not training. I don't want to tap myself on the shoulder, but I can't remember how many years it's been since I missed a single day in training. Like, I take it really seriously. And the more and more I train and teach and people are eager to learn of all different ranks, the more I'm impressed with Ed Parker. Like that system is really freaking complete, with the exception of the ground. And this is where in January 2012, I made a decision. That is an area that I'm deficient. And again, here comes another controversial statement, but hey, maybe it'll add ratings to yourself a little bit. Is can you truly be a martial arts master if you believe the word martial arts? Here comes a big one. So when you look up the word martial on Google, or today it's ChatGPT, it's like warlike, militaristic-like. Yeah, that's a big statement. Okay, and this is why for me, I care about street self-defense. Self-defense is my priority. But if you look up the word martial and we're saying, you know, I've never had someone come to my school, Reggie, that says, hi, I heard of you, Mr. Seabrook. Can you teach me to go win in the next tournament? They always come saying, I want to learn how to defend myself. So all that to say, you know, the missing component I felt was jiu-jitsu. And what I've done in terms of the self-defense is go, okay, that is an area that I was deficient in. And here's the big question I was getting to. Can you truly be a martial arts master if you believe that the word martial means warlike and fighting like, militaristic like, but have very little to nothing, to no idea what to do if the fight goes to the ground? I mean, you know, and I've heard people speak, you know, the fight never goes to the ground. Oh, okay. You know, there's some data that suggests that that's incorrect, but, fights may go to the ground. If the person's bigger, stronger, heavier than you, and as I always said, you say, okay, well, I'll just chop their throat or poke them in the eye or grab their groin. My goodness, if you couldn't do that stand-up, what makes you think you're going to do that when the fight goes to the ground? And you know, I started Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. I believe I was a sixth degree in American Kempo at the time. And I'll tell you, it is really, really freaking humbling to get tapped out. And what I, you know, Reggie, I know you can relate because you're doing VJJ. But what I often find is that, you know, and this is where the humility thing comes in. You can be completely confident and humble. So they're not, people say, oh, you know, but if you think about it, when you move up in rank, subsequent degrees of black belt, how often do you lose? I almost say it on every podcast that I'm on. And usually it's like, well, now I'm a teacher. And that's great. I'm a teacher too and a student. But it's good to lose because losing keeps you humble. And when I say losing, it doesn't mean just taking a class by someone who knows more. I mean losing. Like in my case or your case, but being put in a rear naked choke and feeling what the carotid artery being choked on both sides feels like to the point where you tap or you go to sleep. Or someone grabs your arm, you tap or it gets broken. Like that is really humbling. And I learned to lose, but by learning to lose, I believe that my Kempo went up a lot more because I see things completely different. So I'm still 100%. And it doesn't make me, and I think I've said this before to you, Reggie, it doesn't make me lose appreciation for Ed Parker's Kempo system. More, I have more appreciation. I love it more, but I can bring a little bit more to the table because of that. I also want to say that it was kind of cool after 13 years plus of training now in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. I didn't mention this earlier on this podcast. I made a decision to actually join a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu school. So Matt Trejo and I were doing the Gracie University curriculum and going to a lot of seminars, etc. with the Gracie family. We got promoted by Henner, Hiron Gracie. Hori and Gracie signed our blue belt and our blue stripe 1-2, I think it was, certificates, co-founder of UFC. But a close friend of mine, Kiyoshi Simon Sherborne, who I used to compete with in the 1980s and 1990s, is a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. School is close to mine. I went there and I've been training there in person a couple days a week since last October, and I got promoted to Stripe 4 Blue in May of this year. And it was quite an honor because at that event, he brought in Mozzie Haydary, who is from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And it really cool, the first Hoist Gracie black belt in the entire state of North Carolina. He got up to his, I believe, third or fourth degree under Hoist Gracie, and he was right there when I had to roll, etc., and when I got promoted, which is really, really, really cool too. Hope to get maybe purple belt maybe this year. The school that I'm at is basically when you know the curriculum to purple, you pretty much know it all to black belt, but it's greater mastery of the moves. There's a lot of moves, you know, all the different positions, including the standing. Reggie, I don't know if the school that you're at is similar, but certainly in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. And by the way, I should say it's not a different style system. Kiyoshi Simon Sherborne went from beginner all the way up to purple stripe. I'm not sure what stripe under Hoist Gracie himself. And but what I was going to say is in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, we have so many standing techniques. And I think there's a conception, certainly among Kempo black belts, all you do is lay around on the ground and roll with people. In the Gracie curriculum, there are more, this is always a bit of an ouch, there are more standing techniques than there are in Kempo. They're just approached different. So when we do techniques versus a club or a knife, the technique lasts about 3 seconds, not 12 to 15 seconds where we keep striking and striking. You get the point that I'm trying to make. There's a lot more throwing techniques. I know Kempo has throws. There's way more throws in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. There's way more chokes. And that enhances our Kempo knowledge. But like I said, when we talk about cross-training, it's Kempo to me plus nothing. But I use the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu / Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to enhance the ground. And I use the FMA to enhance the stick and the knife work, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree with that. I will say on the one of the benefits of cross training, at least in my experience, is that I feel like I've been applying a lot of the Kenpo principles to the other arts and kind of vice versa. I definitely think now having doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, there, I mean, on a daily basis, I am applying Kenpo principles to the Jiu-Jitsu, and it's definitely helped my Jiu-Jitsu for 100%. Applying those, and that goes back to just the brilliance of the genius of Ed Parker in that, I mean, these principles, they work, they make sense, they work, they fit. And I've also used that with my Hapkido training and Muay Thai training and even the Capoeira. That it all fits, and it all makes sense, and applying those principles and those techniques, and it enhances everything, and it all links back around. I was at a Kenpo seminar a while back with John Sepulveda, and we were, you know, working joint locks and things like that into our normal Kenpo techniques, and it all fits, and they all feed off of each other and help each other. So that's, for me, that's definitely one of the benefits of cross training and the big part. You know, we could debate where maybe more of the focus should be, but I definitely think if there's anything to take away from or get from cross training in other arts is that that Kenpo base fits very well with everything else, and everything, you know, we can all teach and learn from each other, so and from the different arts. So
I'm a big fan. I think I mentioned him on the first podcast. I'm a big fan of Royce Gracie. I don't think he gets near enough credit as he should, because people now say, oh, you know, everyone is doing jiu-jitsu now, but you understand that, again, you know, in the early 90s when the UFC was created, it was style versus style, and take out the rules except for no eye gouging and no biting, and all of the strikers were convinced they were going to win. I've heard everything from the Gracie conspiracy. Yeah. Look, I watched those fights. They had an opportunity to win and they couldn't get it done. Like, that's, you know, but that said, I heard Royce one time say, if there was three things that you would say defines a top martial artist, what would you say? And I just think it's so brilliant. He makes things so ridiculously simple, and I couldn't agree more. He says, in this order, one, knowledge. You must know what you're doing. So at the end of the day, if you don't have knowledge in martial arts, that you're in trouble. Knowledge. Number two is one that we don't talk a whole lot about. He said endurance. And it's very interesting. He says, you know, you might have the best sports car in the world, but if you got no gas in it, it ain't going anywhere. So when I think about endurance, I think about, and I'm sure Reggie, you experience it, maybe you experience it today at 6 a.m., is when you roll, my goodness, what a workout. Like I have sparred for 40 years, and I don't want to tap myself on the shoulder here, but I can say I know how to take breaks and tire people out because I've been doing it for 40 years. But my goodness, when you have someone 30, 40, 50, 60 pounds heavier on you, laying on top of you in a side mount, and you have to make a decision to escape or chill, man, that is pressure. So at the school that we do, we usually do 5 consecutive rolls, and he has a system build up where you hear beep, 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 and my goodness, that beep couldn't come earlier. But you know what? That is a good thing, because it's like it's pressure testing you, right? It's like when I'm sorry to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway, but you will appreciate it because you do jiu-jitsu. When we do sparring from a standing position, and then you and I, Reggie, get too close, stop, break. There's no break. Now that we're in clinch, the fight continues. There's no breaking. So I love stand up sparring. I do it all the time. Our black belts fight. I like kickboxing, but there's no break. I mean, if you look at those original UFCs, as soon as Hoist Gracie established the clinch, you were done. Leg hook takedown, maybe body full takedown, into side mount, into whatever it might be, back mount, rear naked choke, it was over. So these skills are really, really crucial in my opinion. So number one from Hoist, knowledge. Number two, endurance. Number three was power/strength. And that comes through building your endurance and getting that resistance training as well. And I just thought that was absolutely brilliant. The one last thing I guess I'll say about the jiu-jitsu, Reggie, of maybe how we do things a little different than the Kempo 5.0. And I love what they're doing. I have a lot of great friends in the Kempo 5.0 system for sure. And I've a lot of respect for Jeff Speakman. But one thing that we do a little different is rather than incorporating jiu-jitsu right into the Kempo techniques per se, I don't do that. So I keep, you can say, quote, the blueprint of what Ed Parker taught. So the 154 plus the three remove techniques, aggressive twins, intellectual departure, spreading branch. So I teach 157 base techniques plus the 96 extensions, zero removed. I'm not traditionalizing the art. So one would go, by doing that, you're by definition traditionalizing. I couldn't disagree more, because what I'm doing is they're learning the blueprint of what Ed Parker taught. Sorry, but Ed, this is my opinion. Ed Parker was decades ahead of everybody else. And then what I'm doing is through the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu and the FMA, I'm going, what can we do now that we have this blueprint to work different varieties, enhance this particular technique and this technique, and how can we create a disarm in this lance technique? Oh, we got a choke here. But what I wouldn't want to do, for example, is do, let's make up a technique, delayed sword, clear the arm off, kick the groin, hand sword, and then get on top of them. Because to me, that defeats the purpose. I just hit the person, they bent over. I don't want to go to the ground unless I have to. This is my opinion. And I'm saying that as a jiu-jitsu person. In fact, the danger techniques, leap from danger and counter with danger, the word danger, according to Parker, is the ground is danger. Get back to your feet, right? So even though I'm pro jiu-jitsu, I am first to say, look, there could be more than one attacker. I don't want to hang out in the ground, go, let me test out my Americana arm lock from side control, because someone might just boot me in the head and nothing worked. But I have to have the knowledge of what to do if the fight were to go there. And I know now, with you doing BJJ under the Henzo Grace, under the Henzo Gracie curriculum, that you'll think the same. But it's Reggie, you're going to agree with me on this one. I know how you think now, because I've seen all your BJJ posts. I get excited about this. And that is that people can form all the opinions they want. And I have to be careful how I say this, but I'm gonna say it. Opinions matter more when you've trained in it, right? So when someone goes, oh, sorry, the BJJ has nothing for me, how much time have you spent in that? If it's, I don't know, zero to 3 or 6 months, I'm going to be honest, your opinion carries less weight. But once you've spent time with it, Reggie's attending these 6 a.m., your opinions change. And you're like, whoa. And that was the exact same with me. If I would have spent 6 months in Gracie and saying, it's not for me, that's my decision. But the more and more I got it out of it, the more I loved it, and the more I loved Kempo, because I used it to enhance Kempo.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm going to kind of steal Professor Philip, one of my jiu-jitsu coaches. I'm going to steal his story a little bit. He tells it so eloquently, but he was a pretty high-ranking Kempo black belt. And a friend of his invited him to come try out some jiu-jitsu, and he came in there. Well, kind of first he said, oh, well, you know, I'm going to, like, you know, come in there with my black belt and all my little red stripes and stuff on there. And his friend's like, don't do that. And he's like, oh, okay. So he didn't wear his black belt, but he came in there and thinking, oh, okay, like, I'm going to just go in there and show these guys who's boss. I'm trained under Paul Mills. I've got the goods. And he got into the school, and a young man proceeded to tie him up in many a knots. And he thought, oh well, okay, you got lucky. You got lucky. I'm just warming up. Let's go again. And
the one guy, I don't know if you've ever interviewed him, but if you haven't, I think you should try to get him on your show. And if you have, maybe bring him back. I have trained with most of the seniors, but one person I've never been on the floor with, but I am so impressed with him, Kempo and Jiu-Jitsu. And he's a really doggone good guy. Muhammad Tabatabai.
Yes. Working on trying to get him on. Yes.
Yeah. You know what? Muhammad was one of the few. Of course, it was him, Jody Sasaki, Larry Tatum, and Steve Spry. Those were the main four back in the 80s that had the VHS tapes, which are now long
their production. Oh yeah.
But I'll tell you, his Kempo is really good. He makes I love his instruction, and I can tell you, having now trained since January 2012 in jiu-jitsu, man, his jiu-jitsu is good. And I've reached, one of the only guys I've never been on the floor with. We've done a couple, messenger, just a good guy and someone I hope to meet in the future. He's a fountain of knowledge and high skill. He's someone that I definitely... is on my bucket list to meet sometime. I like him a lot.
I agree. Same. So to just kind of jump back to Professor Phillips' story here. So this young guy ties him up quite a few times and humbles the good professor a bit. And he's, okay, well, all right. Maybe there's something to this jiu-jitsu thing, but. He says that he's heading out of the academy, and it's like, oh, that was pretty good. Like, how long have you been training? And this young guy was like, oh, like about 3 months. And Professor Phillip, had been doing Kempo for 15 years or something like that at the time, I believe. And it's like, okay, well, this little kid with 3 months of jiu-jitsu just embarrassed Phillip quite a bit. He says that he went out to his car and he was just sitting in his car crying, and just he's like, oh, like what have I been doing with my life all this time? But he switched over. He's like, if this kid with 3 months can do this to me, then I definitely need to learn this. And been doing the jiu-jitsu ever since, and he's rocking it. I can actually had my first role with him last week, and there's a reason why he's a black belt. That's that's for sure. But
that's awesome.
It's good times.
But again, I would go, Reggie, and I know you would agree too, is that but there's where the striking arts also do come in. So. Okay, here we go. I'll say this. You only train BJJ. I would go, sorry, but real fights don't start where we put our hands up. We're trying to get our hands on each other. People want to punch the head. They want to kick the groin. So that level of training is also very, very, very important. And when you look at the evolution of, say, mixed martial arts, that's why you see now one style can't do it. So if you jump into the UFC, I'll give you an example. Cron Gracie, I think that's how you pronounce his name, Hickson Gracie's son. He hasn't done the best because he lacks in the striking. Hoyce Gracie did phenomenal, but you got to understand the people that he was fighting. I know there was Ken Shamrock and whatnot, but a lot of them weren't versed in both striking and ground. So now, in my opinion, to be a complete martial artist, you need both components. So I know too that, you know, if I was to roll someone, we were to bring our hands up like this and trying to, you know, get that position where we get the collar grab and we get the wrist grab, etc. Fights aren't going to start that way. Someone's going to try to hit you. And even why I'm a little bit, I'll be a little critical now of BJJ, if it, the focus is purely sport, so I'm in, someone's in my guard, and, you know, I have various ways I can tap them. I can do a kimura, as you know, a triangle choke, triple threat, all that kind of stuff. It's great. But in reality, if I was ever in that position on the street, the person would try to punch me in the face. So this is a bit of an ouch, but Henner Gracie, who I got my blue stripe one, blue stripe two, he's brought people into the UFC. He said at one of the seminars I attended, if you're at a BJJ school and the word punch is not mentioned in an hour class, if you want to learn self-defense, run for the door, because the focus is exclusively sport. So that way of thinking, shoot, I'm in the guard, I'm already thinking punch protection, headbutt, right? That's the reality. So I think that's where that intermixing of jujitsu with kempo makes it so united and strong. And that's my way of thinking for that. So, you know, sometimes, sure, if I let's say I didn't know any jujitsu at all and I was back as a sixth degree, right? In 2012 when I started jujitsu. If the rule mindset is, here, I'm going to try to roll and play with your rules, of course I will lose. But am I allowed to punch? Am I allowed to jab? Am I allowed to cross? Like, jujitsu people who are only jujitsu are not used to getting hit by strikes either. So I think that combo evens the odds a bit.
I agree. Well said. All right. Well, so we're going to move to wrapping up here. So in our first episode, you didn't get to do this part. So now you get to do this part, and we're going to move to shameless self-promotion. So you can go ahead and plug anything you'd like, or if there's anything else that we didn't cover that you wanted to mention, let's go ahead and get that out there. You have the floor, and then we'll close out from there.
The only thing I would say is that, you know, I'll do a motivational thing and just put one thing out there. And that is, you know, I have a Seabrook Martial Arts Academy YouTube channel. We have almost 4,000 subscribers in it right now, which is pretty amazing. I give everything completely free content. And I do that not to go, look at me, but to help people stay motivated. I have so many people I've never met, of course, all across the world, from virtually every country out there. There's sometimes I have to do English detection into language because I don't yet know what language it is, saying that, you know, they'll use my videos to, you know, improve their form, improve their techniques, to get a better understanding of the system. And I just want to really encourage everybody. Martial arts, in my opinion, is one of the best things for physical and mental health. Mental health is at an all-time struggle right now for all kinds of reasons. Myriad of factors, which is a whole nother podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody at some point struggles with mental health. And mental health and physical health are very interconnected. We need activity. You get that from martial arts. We need better blood pressure control. We get that through physical exercise and endurance. We need connection. And by connection, that means, you know, Reggie, you and I getting together, or whomever you're with, and connecting with real live people, not just on our phones. Martial arts is second to none for connection. Activity, blood pressure control, connection, D, diet. They're all interconnected. When we exercise more and we take our training more seriously, we make better choices with respect to our diet. And the last is sleep. All of these are interconnected. When we exercise more, when we eat healthier, when we connect with people, when we get our blood pressure under control, our sleep patterns, all of this is related to brain health. And I don't want to sound put on my epidemiologist lens here, but you know what? Brain health is really crucial in an information society, knowledge society like we have now. So my YouTube channel, and the other thing I'd just say in closing would be, if anyone is interested in having me come teach a seminar, I know sometimes fees can be astronomical and it kind of becomes a deterrent. That's not how I do things. I just like to share, connect with people. I've been fortunate to teach all across Canada, the United States, and most recently Chile. And I'd love to get to know a lot of you. A lot of people have reached out. I'm always available. You can connect with me. And Reggie, from the bottom of my heart, thanks a lot for the show. It's a huge service. I know you do it because you love it, but it's also a huge service. And you do a really phenomenal job, and I really mean this, Reggie, at connecting people. And the people that I want to associate with, I don't care about your skill level. If you put yourself up here and everyone else is below you in a hierarchical thing, I have no interest. But if I have interest in connecting with people who are like-minded, that want to share, that don't put themselves on a pedestal, and that bring the humility and connection that you bring out of your show. So that's how I'll close it. And a thank you to you, not to me.
Well, that's thank you so much. I always mention, or I always say that, you know, I'm just so thankful that for folks like you that one agreed to be on. to you that you are just out here to share your knowledge, share your experience, and share your journey, so that, you know, we can connect and grow this art, and connect with each other. The pandemic really did a number on society and people's minds and people's emotions and things like that. And we really need an outlet to be able to kind of to help heal all of that damage that was done over the whole COVID thing. So I'm I can't thank you enough for taking the chance to be my first guest, and I'm just really thankful for your support just continue to keep inspiring and sharing your knowledge and sharing all the great things, I thank you for being on being on my anniversary episode here, and we've got more great things coming in the future. Like I mentioned, a lot of great guests. I've got a video episode that is, kind of a long story, but that is coming up at some point. I'm also toying with the idea of doing some live shows. So we'll see how that goes, but. I thank you again, and I'm thank you to all the folks that have been listening and supporting, and we'll just keep things going as we can, and just keep learning and growing together. So thank you so much, and we will close out for today.
Thanks, Reggie. Respect.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.